Welcome to Up Nerd Population. Me and Abby. Say hello.
Hello.
Me. I'm Abby.
Hello.
You sound much like your orc character in the game we'll be discussing today as we update our progress on Baldur's Gate 3. I chose a Githyanki fighter. You chose an orc barbarian as your lead.
Yes, ask me why.
All right, why?
You started playing this before I did.
Yes.
So I got to watch you play a little bit of it.
In my beautiful finesse and brilliance, the best gameplay you've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was like, well, I have to get in on this. I think I was having a headache and I was bored and I just needed something to do where I didn't have to move my head. But I decided to get Baldur's Gate 3 on the Steam Deck, and that's how I've been playing it. So I've been playing it portable.
Mashing your forehead against
on a full charge.
Mashing your forehead against the controllers furiously. Mm-hmm. Slamming your face against the thumbsticks.
Yeah, in meat a work.
Vain meat attempt work. At some type of gameplay.
Percussive maintenance. It works every time, most of the time, sometimes. So I saw the way in which the game system works. Let's put it that way. So it's a role-playing game. It is more in line with something like Arcanum of Steamworks and Magicka Obscurum rather than Fallout. Arcanum was a deep sort of magic D&D inspired RPG game from, let's say, charitably 20 years ago. I had a harder time getting into that at the time, and even still kind of today, because a lot of the systems seem very esoteric. You know, how do I know what my charisma modifier is? How do I know when that applies? Why would that ever apply? Versus something like Fallout, made by the same company, which just kind of really drilled it down to what is strength effect? Okay, strength affects how much damage you do with melee weapons. What is agility effect? It's gunshots and how fast you can run, things like that. So I looked at you playing this very heavily inspired Dungeons and Dragons game. It is, in fact, a Dungeons and Dragons game. And I saw all these like, oh, a character can make a saving throw about this. Oh, blah, blah, blah. So I said, right. I prefer to play my RPGs as spellcasters because in the olden days of computers, that's how you got the most out of your graphics. If you wanted to see the best that a game could offer on your Voodoo 2 accelerated graphics processing unit card, you played a spellcaster. So I played a spellcaster. I did not do that this time, even though I very much wanted to, because I knew I was going to get absolutely murdered by the game. I went with the easiest thing I could think of, which is somebody who can just hit something very hard consistently. So I rolled a half-orc barbarian because it was the strongest strength. And like those two things combined gave me a strength of 17 and a intelligence of 8. And that was A-okay with me because I saw the actuality of playing the game. And I didn't want to frustrate myself overly by doing what I would normally be inclined to do. So I had a little bit of forewarning that helps me get into the game by informing me ahead of time of like, okay, I will probably enjoy going through the game as literally just somebody who has a stick that can hit things consistently most of the time. And as it turns out, I was correct.
That is the longest version of melee hit things I have ever heard.
Yeah, that's the intelligence 19 version of melee hit things. But I very specifically, I think if you will listen back, we can go back. Is that I very specifically do not necessarily like to play as straight melee characters. I prefer to play as the old glass cannon. You know, you shoot one fireball, it does 4,000 damage, but then you're spent. And I knew that if I did that this time, I was not going to have a good time.
I would argue much of your problems, though, or many of your problems are exacerbated by playing it on the Steam Deck. I can hover over something and see specific stats and reasons as to why something happened, playing it on a full-size computer very easily.
Yeah.
And I have done so, and it's allowed me to sort of learn an awful lot more about the game's mechanics and the like, and a lot more about D&D mechanics in general as well, too. Mm. Steam Deck is it's a computer the size of, not a Game Boy, but it's bigger than like a PlayStation Portable. It's a decent size, but it's essentially a handheld computer and allows you to kind of play wherever.
Very small laptop with no hood.
Yes, it's a very neat gaming device but it is not the optimum way to play anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to confuse it with playing it on a full-size monitor or anything like that. But it is really neat to be able to play like PlayStation 5 games on a handheld device and just not have issues, like not have slowdown or anything like that. Like the way the technology has come along, it's advanced significantly, but it is not the optimum way to play Baldur's Gate 3. Baldur's Gate 3.
That's a fair point.
Which is an RPG, as we've mentioned, based on Dungeons and Dragons, set in that world and using those systems. When we left off, I had started through Act 1 and was still sort of assembling the party, getting the lay of the land. The remainder of Act 1, this I'm going to try to keep this spoiler-free as well. The remainder of Act 1 is relatively the same. You're just sort of getting a lay of the land, learning your different sort of factions, different groups, and things you're going to encounter. There are some pretty notable and pretty interesting quests within it. We have now completed, both of us, Act 2. This is a three-act game. There are noticeable splits. You know when you've completed an act of the game. Act 1 was very much sort of setting the stage and was a lot like your standard sort of role-playing game and the way you play them. And you and I have talked about this. Act 2 feels more like actual Dungeons & Dragons. Mm. It feels like you are being watched by a DM, by a dungeon master or somebody organizing things. It feels like there could be danger around every corner, or you don't know what you're going to encounter next or what you're going to have to do next. And that feeling was a lot more prevalent in Act 2. And it's really interesting how different it was. It was less straightforward and it was probably a lot more dangerous, but in the end, I feel like I kind of enjoyed it more. The atmosphere helped a lot. Like I say, that feeling that you don't know what you're going to find next. I'm going to open this next door. What am I going to find? I'm going to explore this cave. What am I going to find? What's in this mysterious glowing chest? You know, all that kind of thing is really prevalent in Act 2, combined with what's really neat about both of us playing this at the same time is it lessens that feeling of FOMO, feeling of missing out, in terms of there's an insane amount of content in this game. And the developers, Larian Studios, who did an amazing job, they're not afraid of creating content that you may miss if you play a particular way or if you choose to have one party makeup or group versus another group of your characters that are available to you from your camp. They're not afraid to create stuff that you're not going to see on the first playthrough. And that goes so far as there are many different ways to solve a lot of the issues, as we've both found out. It's like your character is not the sharpest tool in the shed, whereas mine has the ability to talk their way, like they're high in deception and that sort of thing. They talk their way out of things. They're very persuasive and it's really neat. Reminds me of the original Dragon Age, or it reminds me a lot of Mass Effect, in that, again, the developers weren't afraid to take risks and make stuff that people aren't necessarily going to see. It reminds me of the first time I ever saw that, which was Wing Commander 1 and 2 back in the PC DOS days. They would create winning and losing tracks where if you failed a certain mission, you would be immediately put on a different track than if you had passed it. Mm. And so you see scenes and the game plays out differently based on these branching points. And I remember thinking like how interesting that was. And I had some idea at the time, but you know, these games were 1989 and then 1991 for Wing Commander 2, which had more branching pathways. Mm. But stuff like that was really not done. And that was the first time I can remember seeing it and how neat and interesting it was that your performance and what you did in a game could affect it that much. And that's almost all this game is. And again, it reminds me a lot of Witcher 3, where there are unintended consequences for nearly every action you do in the game. And I really like that. It's really well done here. It's really organic. it makes sense how character X or NPC X, I guess, would act if this happens versus this. It's been really interesting to play through, and it's been fascinating to have like the two of us able to sort of compare notes as we go.
Yeah, and we're coming to some of the same conclusions, but for different reasons. I think I was the one who mentioned that, like, this feels like Dragon Age because it feels like Dragon Age. Like, it just looks like, it doesn't look like Dragon Age, but it's in that same sort of vein. You know, if you talk to your companion, the camera switches to talk to them. You've got your little base camp where you can romance and things like that. So it's very much Dragon Age inspired in that sense.
By the way, Dragon Age Origins from, I believe, Mass Effect was 2007. Mm-hmm. When was Dragon Age Origins? Oh boy, right around 07. Yeah. That's quite some time ago. In any case, yeah, it's an older game. Fantastic. The bright side about this game versus Dragon Age Origins, you don't get these great scenes where you talk to somebody, they tell you about an awesome piece of loot or an amazing cave or great realm, and they tell you, download the downloadable content to go to...
Well, that's where EA comes in.
Yeah, good old Electronic Arts. Now, this is by Larian Studios, and there is no downloadable content, so that does not happen, and it's great.
There is, in fact, a little bit of DLC. So you could buy the, I don't know what they call it, we'll call it the Game of the Year edition, but you could pay a little bit more money, and I think it's just like $10, but it gives you like an extra hat.
Yes, yeah, so you get a couple items it's like that a supporter I've never used yet.
Yeah, so I did that, and I was like, that's fine. That's okay. We bought it on sale, so we saved $10 anyway, so they can have it back.
That's the spirit.
Yeah. But yeah, so we got to the same conclusions, but for different reasons. I think I also enjoyed Act 2 more looking back on it, but for different reasons. And I also agree that it feels more like a Dungeons & Dragons game, but for different reasons. Act 1 makes me feel like I'm playing almost every other RPG that has been created in the last 20 years. It feels very sort of standard high fantasy, which is normal. It's your tutorial act, right? You're coming out of that and you're maybe level 7. Going from baby Bobo, orc smash to a strapping and young robust fighter in our case.
Let me know when you get to that, by the way.
I'm you'll also notice that I am slightly ahead of you in terms of leveling, and I attribute that to my zeal for direct and quick solutions, executive decisions.
I attribute it to your significantly higher time played count.
I really haven't.
Yeah.
It shows like that because I leave it on overnight.
It's interesting because the hours on the Steam Deck say something completely different.
Yeah, they say like 490 hours.
That seems about right.
Because I leave it on
that
overnight.
Must be it. Yeah, well, your eyes are on.
Well, said you wouldn't tell.
Anyway.
Act 2, meanwhile, does feel more like a Dungeons and Dragons experience, but it's because I, as a learned person, have played Dungeons and Dragons before, and I can sort of see in my mind's eye, okay, that's the module that they're pulling this from, or that could be a module. Like, there's a quest with a kid, and that whole sort of back part of that really felt like this was taken from the pages of a specific adventure module that you can buy separately. It's sold separately, but of course it's integrated very, very well into the game. But it really gave me that feeling of this could be something that you get somebody together for a 3-hour play session or a 6-hour play session over 2 weeks, something like that.
You're talking about a child in Act 2, correct? Not
yes.
The child in Act 1, which had its life cut short abruptly due to your questionable actions.
Because the game has decided on a die roll that I was not first. I think it was intimidation too, which is the weird part. So I think I rolled intimidation to like convince somebody not to do something to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I failed that roll. And then something happened to somebody. But as it turns out, you who did not fail that die roll, I did try. You who did not fail that die roll are seeing very different consequences from that later on than what I did.
Yeah. As in, I'm
trying to keep
children,
this as spoiler-free as possible. This is going to be the most interesting
in my game,
podcast
children,
of all time.
In my game, children keep alive. It's a fascinating difference. Yeah.
And yet all the adults are dead. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Hmm. I also think I like Act 2 a little bit better because we are not newborn toddlers with wiffle bats trying to desperately land a hit. Darien really comes into his own just somewhere around level 6 or something like that. Just turns into this absolute insane powerhouse. Shadowheart's still having a little bit of trouble. But
her characters are also different. So the people you are describing, for the record, Asterion and Shadowheart are two companions you can have join you in Act 1. They are like NPCs. They are not your player character. They are not created by you. Having said that, they can differ pretty greatly in terms of how you decide to change them or what you decide to choose for them as you level them up. So, for example, my Asterion I built as a rogue and has been a powerhouse for quite some time with just sort of, he can do crazy rogue stuff. In particular, if he's able to get the drop on somebody or something like that, he's able to cause a lot of mayhem.
Yeah, you went straight cloak and dagger with him, whereas I had him learn wizard spells because the interface on the Steam Deck is actually very good, but it's just kind of a pain to toggle out of like stealth or things like that. So no patience for it. Boom, boom, bat, bat, stick,
My
stick.
Favorite moments are when you A, have attacked your own people, or B, my personal favorite was when you're in the middle of a fight and you drank poison instead of a potion.
Listen, your average cell phone has a screen about as big as the Steam Deck.
It's much bigger than that, but
anyway. It's very hard to tell who is who in the heat of battle, and you're trying to do it all with buttons. One thing that differed was so you can have a party of four. So we are playing as our own player characters. We both have Shadowheart, we both have Asterion, and then I stuck with Gale. You stuck with somebody who, you kind of bopped around, but you joined somebody who will be spoilerific. We talk about it, but I started with Gale, and he's the wizard, and he's essentially what I would have picked. And he was just a nightmare, and still kind of is a nightmare to keep alive for most of Act 1 and even into Act 2. Now that we're at the end of Act 2 and he's starting to deal like 50 damage with a fireball, it's a little bit more manageable. But it does bring me back to that whole idea of the Dungeons and Dragons framework, if you will. Like, hey, you know all these spells, but you can only use the ones that you have, you know, prepared ahead of time, which is kind of weird to me. It can make a kind of sense, but it's also kind of weird. Spell slots, I feel, are kind of a kick in the orc nords. You get more of them the more powerful you become, but you will always have fewer of the more powerful ones than you do the lesser ones.
It's all
true.
And
you can only use one per turn.
And that's all true, but I would argue that you need some type of limitation.
Yeah.
The game already, to be perfectly honest, is not all that difficult.
Okay, well, you know.
You need something to kind of limit what the player can do. And in a lot of ways, you're only limited by your own imagination in some of the fights. If you have the ability to prepare, I guess we're going Batman rules, but if you have the ability to prepare, you can beat pretty much anything in the game, seemingly. There are just so many options for, you can have your mage, you know, dump a bunch of water on the floor because they have the ability to create water, and then turn it to ice and just keep a bunch of enemies grouped together. You can throw grease or oil onto them and then set it ablaze with a fireball.
Shadowheart has a spell that allows her to just have enemies drop their weapons that I'm sure I saw it at some point and thought to myself, that's never going to land. I know what this is. This is an RPG. She's going to try it and it's going to fail. I'm just going to go for the straight. Give me the fireball. Boom, 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 smash, smash, smash. Direct. Executive decision making. Direct. Glass cannon. And it turns out it's very useful. So you're correct in that. It also got me thinking of, do I need to change my way of thinking, or is it the game that is wrong? So
no.
It could. Well, but they're trying to get me to buy the game for $80, right? So.
But we already did buy the game.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying.
I'm a little confused where you're trying to go with this. In any case,
That I don't know that if I hadn't bought it, I think if it had been even slightly more like hardcore D&D, I don't know that I would have played it. I didn't really, I honestly had kind of no interest in it. until I saw you start playing it.
Maybe, but I think...
did not want to deal with the whole like, oh, you've got a saving throw, or like, here's 18 different stat things.
Yeah, but that's one of the advantages of playing it in this format. It is very D&D. People who play D&D for the most part will feel at home here, but people who don't, a lot of it is hidden, and you are helped significantly if you are willing to read and look into certain things within the game. It will generally describe them to you and describe to you the mechanics. But even if you don't, it's buoyed by excellent writing, excellent rule building, and an amount of care that went into it that is absent from so many games. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned a handful back when I was talking about it. I've mentioned things like, yeah, Mass Effect or Witcher 3 is sort of amongst my kind of kings of them in terms of games that you can sense the care that went into them, and it permeates every moment of the game. And this is like that you feel that a lot of detail went into it, a lot of play testing, a lot of, you know, there are bugs, but the issue isn't in how something interacts with something or someone in the game or the writing, or there's a level of care that really just kind of draws me into it in ways that, you mentioned Arcanum. It is a very good game. It is a well-done game. It is by a team I absolutely adore, but I've just never been able to get into it. This drew my attention to it. And the system, despite some of its issues and despite some of the learning curve there is to D&D and its mechanics, I was still drawn to it. They've created a game world and characters that are so compelling that even if I hated the other stuff or I couldn't get used to it, I think I still can want to continue to get through.
Yeah. Like, it's Gale is a delight. Friendship ended with the Uneven Flow. Now Gale is my best friend. It's incredible. The voice actor is incredible. The way that they have created this character, for the first time in my life, when Gale dies, there is a scene that plays, which is very Gale, G-A-L-E, as in the gust of wind. I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, yeah, that sounds like something he would do. You know, like, oh, that's so Gale. And I never really thought that before. Came totally out of left field, but makes a lot of sense. I also probably wouldn't have agreed with you in terms of the like, oh yeah, there's so much different stuff that you could or could not see. Before this afternoon, when I was casually playing some Baldur's Gate 3 during my lunch hour, and I started a new game because we wanted to record this podcast before we moved on to Act 3, and I'm jonesing and I do not want to study. So I rolled a paladin, and paladins have to take an oath to uphold justice or to do such and such or to essentially act a certain way. If you, even in an unintended way, act against that oath, so let's say your oath is to always be kind and pet all the kittens, and you see a kitten and you decide that, no, it would be too dangerous for me to pet that kitten. I can't pet that kitten. Sorry, oath is broken. And then there's a whole thing that I've never seen before that happens. And there's a whole character that comes up, and then there's a whole mechanic that just is like specific to paladins. It's crazy. So like, how much more of that is there?
There's a fair amount. I mean, there's stuff we haven't discussed. I am aware of differences in our game that we haven't really, games between our main characters that we haven't really talked about.
There are entire scenes with people that I have not experienced because I am just immediately executive decision thinking, we are moving forward, always upwards, stonks, bop, bop, bop. And I'm sorry, you were in between me and somebody who was hostile, so now you're hostile, and I'm going to win this fight. So there are entire areas where you have interacted with characters that I only know because they are now a smear on the ground. That whole your homeboys there, the Githyanki.
Yeah, I was able to speak with them versus they were immediately hostile to you, and I was able to do things for them and interact with them and trade and speak and add all this extra content that if you are either not a member of that race or don't have
We're not
someone
a psychopath.
In your party with you who is that race, you will not be able to interact with them. And they, again, you know, they're willing to create all this content that some people are just going to miss out on. Also, I mean, to be fair, it's in an area that in theory you could also miss out on if you go in the other direction, for example, on the way to Act Two. So there's something really neat about the sort of fearlessness in the development of this game. And the freedom that they decided to, and it's really infectious. Mm-hmm. It's one of the other things that just draws me to it. And it's always interesting to me when I see, or when there is media like that, be it games, books, whatever, and we see it less and less because money is so involved.
Well, but it's also taking more money.
So that's what I meant, is that when money is involved, it's both the cost and therefore what you need to bring in. And there's a complete lack of freedom right now in games. We talked a little bit about it during the Suicide Squad, which was a colossal failure for Warner Brothers, and the DC Dual Force discussion we had a few podcasts back on another variety show that you should check out. In any case, we talked about it a bit then that development costs are so high that there's just a reluctance amongst the largest developers to take any chances or to do anything that might be considered different or take any risk, essentially. And it's not just them, it's TV, it's books, it's everything. It's the same sort of issue. We've had rising costs. You look at the Netflix shows and you compare some of what they were willing to try and do earlier to everything now, which, you know, we're watching essentially the world's cheapest reality show on Netflix at the moment. But there's a reason that stuff exists. One is, of course, supply and demand, but the other is it's cheap. It keeps their costs down. It allows them to create some content and not have to pay that much for it. And they know people will watch it versus you decide you want to create a new science fiction series. It's not based on anything. It's just completely new. You have next to no chance of getting that green light, I would think. Cost would be prohibitive, even with CGI costs coming down. If you want to build sets, that'll cost you even more. Netflix wouldn't even shell out for sets for Arrested Development, apparently. They're not going to let you build a spaceship in their garage or wherever you want to film it, you know?
And that's where you get, it's funny you bring this up. I've been watching a lot of Tim and Eric, because that's basically just what my mind is like at all times. I've been watching this show that they did after Tim and Eric, which is called Tom Goes to the Mayor. And it's a quote, it's an animated show, but it is very much made on a budget. And it's fantastic because they saw that constraint. You know, they're not big movie stars. They're not big. It's Adult Swim. They were, you know, big enough studio, but they don't have millions of dollars for this. So how do we make something that's actually really interesting to look at and also very enjoyable to watch and very funny to watch for if you're into that? And do it on a budget. And those constraints, the particularly monetary, we're seeing breed creativity all over the place. And it's kind of like that with any medium, right?
Well, you see it now in games in terms of the independent games.
Yeah.
Independent games have surpassed the AAA, Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, et cetera, et cetera. Indie stuff has surpassed them in terms of its ingenuity and innovation at a significantly alarming rate. In other mediums, like something like television, we talked about this in the Star Trek podcast, that the constraints can lead to unintended quality. There's something about the original series episode, Devil in the Dark. It's a fantastic episode, and it's because the writing is what holds up. And the essence of Star Trek that's there, when in reality, all it is there's a dude under a carpet playing the alien. They had to work around that. One that always comes to mind is the old Doctor Who, which is created on an absolute shoestring budget. But you look at how they had to do things or how the plot had to change based on it. And it's very interesting. There is almost a sense of adventure to it that I think is missing if you were to just computer generate everything and your characters are looking at a tennis ball instead of a guy in a suit or something like that. And then you go to the more modern day kind of considered classic items. Breaking Bad was not super expensive, but they near constantly had to do things on a budget, be it trying to tie a camera to a balloon instead of renting a crane. There's just a variety of different techniques and things they ended up trying, which pretty much all worked out in their favor and helped the show versus hinder it. But that's stuff you wouldn't have come across, and especially not if you had just computer generated everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no chance of it there. It's unfortunate. That seems to be something that we're losing. I mean, we could talk all day about the gaming industry kind of falling backwards because it's not pretty. I mentioned Suicide Squad. I mean, it failed. And surprise, surprise, Warner Brothers took all of the wrong lessons from it and are going to double down. And then the next game is going to be a catastrophic failure for them. So there's not a solution here, by the way. It's interesting to me that you can have something like Baldur's Gate 3, which was a phenomenal success. I stopped paying attention. I believe it was at around 9 million or so copies sold. So a significant amount of money. It's really only gone on sale the one time. And even then it was only around 10%, but it has brought in a significant amount of money, and just everybody takes the wrong lessons from it. Nobody's trying to emulate the things that people enjoy, which is it's a single player game made with a ton of care, and there's no sort of downloadable content. You're buying the game, you have the game. You don't have to pay an extra $40 to actually get an ending or something, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Or your favorite character, Gale, is $29.99.
Yeah. Unlock Gale with a new shirt for $30. Yeah.
Man, I didn't even think about a new shirt.
By the way, I hope you and Gail enjoy watching the remainder of Love is Blind season one together.
Listen, that may have just invented a new fun variety show for us.
No. Yeah. Anyway. And now for some actual housekeeping. We have our first Patreon. So thank you very much. We will have to get in touch as they have subscribed at a tier where they will be able to choose a television show or film.
Mm-hmm.
For us to watch.
Mm-hmm. You have subscribed to James Bond, Die Another Day.
I was going to say, I hope it is not a Bond film. Also, side note, you are not allowed to, as in you, Abby, are not allowed to subscribe to the Patreon and then add Die Another Day or something. We're not doing
okay.
That.
All right. Abby will not subscribe to the Patreon. And
yeah, it's
going to
be
Die
under Basil, producer Basil Bear or Harley, or they are not. Anyway, we're not doing
Abby
that.
With an I. Well, seems very interested in this Bond, was it?
That's all for this episode. If you want to rate or review the podcast, please do. It is much appreciated. Please help spread the word of our tiny little operation here. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at upnerdpodcasts@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at upnerdpodcast. You can find us on Blue Sky, upnerdpodcast.be.
It's in the thing.
L Sky.
It's in the thing.
Oh man, why
it's
is it so hard
description.
To anyway.
How has nobody figured this out?
We were on Facebook.
We just want Facebook 2008 back. That's it.
No.
Just do that. Somebody with $1.6 billion just build Facebook. You know what? I'm going to do it. That's enough of this. Direct, action orientated. Here we go.
Anyway, you can find us on Facebook presently at Up Nerd Podcasts on Facebook. And that is all for this episode. We will be doing Live, Die, Repeat or Edge of Tomorrow for the next show, which is fine, you pick. And then the next sort of scheduled item will be top three, bottom three on The Witcher.
Yeah, we're actually really enjoying our Netflix subscription. We had to do it for Arrested Development because I forgot that it was a Netflix only thing. We hadn't had Netflix for a while.
I'm a little disturbed by the fact that going into The Witcher, it looks like we might have stumbled into another Arrested Development scenario, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
That's for another show. Anywho, I am the Uneven Flow. thank you for listening. And
I am the even Abby flow. I am the
Orc barbarian.
I get things. You need something done, I will get it done. Don't ask too many questions. I'm not going to ask too many questions. There's no real questions to ask.
We're just the editing on this show done. Boop, all right, turn that down.
Goodbye. Me Abby. Me Abby. Me want to podcast. Me want to podcast.
We. Where? Why'd you hang up?